Hello, I'm Will Stein, and welcome to Geography Island Jams. This podcast is in the same style as the BBC Radio 4 Desert Island Disc series, whereby each episode I ask my interviewee what 8 songs, book, and luxury item they would want to take with them if they were stranded on a desert island. For rights reasons, the music has not been included in the podcast. You can find links to the 8 songs on the LSE Geography and Environment website. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Geography Island Jams. Joining me today, I have Jason Wong, a former LSE Environmental Economics Fellow. Whilst Jason was only at the LSE for one academic year, he made a great impact on the academic community. He lectured in GY121, Sustainable Development, and assisted the delivering of GY428, Applied Quantitative Methods. His lectures being some of the most creative I've ever seen. One lecture involves students dismantling an array of electronic products and discussing the circular economy of which the materials were made up of. Jason also supervised a series of dissertations, both master's and undergraduate, across the year. Jason has spent his life living all over the world. Whilst he spent the first 13 years of his life living in Hong Kong, he has since lived in cities across Asia, Europe, and North America. Accompanying Jason's list of countries he's lived in, Jason fluently speaks 4 languages: English, Cantonese, Mandarin, and German, and there's 2 in progress, French and Japanese. Since leaving the LSE, Jason has acquired the position of assistant professor at Occidental College in Los Angeles. Welcome, Jason.
Thanks, Will. Really excited to be here.
So I thought I'd start off about asking about the LSE experience. So as I said, you're a fellow in environmental economics. What did you enjoy most about teaching at LSE?
Well, I certainly think would be the students. I think they are really strong and motivated. And even though I had a sort of a large lecture of 90 students in GY121, for example, I was very glad to see a lot of them in office hours and get to know them personally. And one of the highlights of my time there was GY121 and having that relationship with students. And some of them approached me and we ended up doing a competition together. So I coached a team of students from GY121 through a clean tech challenge by the London Business School, and they made it to the finalist round. And that was really exciting for me.
And can you tell me about the time I mentioned in the introduction where you did the circular economies in your lecture? How did you get the idea for that and how did it go?
Well, so that's interesting. How did that get all started? When I was doing my PhD at Columbia, I came across this competition announcement called the Global Retail Challenge. And that was at the time sponsored by McGill University as an academic partner. And I came up with the idea of just sending the announcement to my students at Columbia and asking them, you know, anyone interested? And I was you know, happy to be a coach and mentor. And some of them took me up on that offer, and we ended up sort of preparing, assembling a team to compete in this competition, which was around circular economy of retail industries. And throughout the competition, they learned a lot about the circular economy with various exercises. And one of the most memorable ones that I remembered from that experience was a challenge or activity in which they have to break down a product physically, tear it down into the bits and pieces, and sort of analyze where the materials are coming from, what are the production processes possibly, that it reaches final form, and think critically about what are the opportunities for innovation and making it more sustainable. And so I sort of borrowed this idea into my teaching in GY121 and thought, well, what a great way to sort of wrap up the term, the Michaelmas term, and to have them really think real world and think about, let's bring all these things into the lecture hall. So I had to change rooms that day to find one that's large enough that we can all spread out and have different tables. And of course, the department was very helpful. We had everyone sort of donate used electronics and hoovers and water kettles and all kinds of things and get little toolkits. And yeah, it was quite an operation, I must say, for an hour. But I think the students enjoyed it, and we ended up creating these annotated posters. Some teams broke down keyboards and stuck them onto the poster boards, and we had quite a nice display actually in St. Clement's for a while. So that's sort of how that came about. And interestingly, I'll be working more on this competition moving forward. And our department will be an academic partner for this competition, which is now going to be called Global Circular Challenge moving forward. So that's very exciting.
Just before we get into the first song, you said another one of your highlights was supervising students during their dissertations. Why was that a highlight to you?
Well, I always liked this one-on-one mentorship and also group mentorship. One of the best things that as a student, when I was a student myself, was to think through and execute a research project. And dissertation supervision is exactly that, right? I think you need someone that can inspire you and keep you going. And it's just a very hard, self-driven, self-disciplined process. And I thought that, I really enjoyed being able to serve that function for my students. I had 10 master's advisees, and I ended up having one undergraduate advisee as well for dissertations. And I've enjoyed so much interacting with them and sort of giving them all the tips and things I wish I had or wish I had heard in the past when I was a student doing my dissertations. And I think I really enjoyed it because I got to know how they think and really see their potential and help them through what they wanted to do. So I think that was a very rewarding experience for me. And I was very lucky that one of my students nominated me, and I ultimately won a teaching award, which I was very happy about and very surprised, actually. So very grateful for that.
Now, Jason, we're moving on to the music. Can you tell me about the first song you'll be taking with you?
Yes. So when I started listening to all the Geography Island Jams, of course, I was very intimidated by some of the interviewees' amazing musical knowledge. And I must confess that I think I'm lacking in that department. But I gave it some thought in terms of how I wanted to organize my 8 songs. And I thought about it in a way that while we're on a geography island, well, we were stuck on a desert island. And I think the first thing that came to my mind was that we will undergo sort of this 5 stages of grief and loss. And I sort of arranged my songs around that ordering in some way. So the first stage is obviously denial. So I think I'll be in denial that I'm sort of stuck on my own on the island. And I think the first song I would like to hear would be something that's sort of uplifting and that I just arrived somewhere and it's still, you know, beach, right? I mean, a desert island or, you know, there must be some beach and water. It seems like a nice vacation, a nice holiday that those of us who are stuck in lockdown at the moment won't be able to enjoy. So that's a pretty good thing. So my first song is Another Day of the Sun from the La La Land cast, which was the 2016 Oscar-winning movie starring Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. And it's especially fitting for me right now as well because the setting is in Los Angeles. They met and fell in love, and the opening song, which is Another Day of the Sun, has this amazing choreography with so many cast members just dancing in the middle of the famously congested Los Angeles highways. And it was just such an amazing visual feat and such an uplifting and energetic song that that's probably when I would just imagine on the desert island as the first song. Just I'm in denial and I'm happy, and the song is very interesting in a way that it's very optimistic, and yet it does acknowledge some of the being turned away in this sort of very competitive Hollywood industry, and you just wake up and keep going, and you know, another day of the sun. It's beautiful out here. So it's very optimistic as well. So I think when in denial, this is probably the song of my first song that I will choose. And as you will hear later, I love musicals, and most of my songs are from musicals. So that's another thing.
So it's clear you've got an interest in sustainability and the environment. When did you first become interested in that area?
Well, I would say as a young boy growing up in Hong Kong, it is a place where every summer we get a lot of typhoons. So, or you might know them by hurricanes or tropical cyclones. And I've always been fascinated by the weather. We get these typhoons. And we have, in Hong Kong, we have a very sophisticated warning system with different numbers. And those warning signs appear on the TV, and, you know, off different levels, you respond accordingly, right? So there are different, if it's level 8 and above, there's no school. And it was always very exciting in some ways, right? We were very privileged to have a very sort of well-functioning forecasting system and buildings that are up to code and able to resist all these things. And for me, it was always sort of fun to see when they're coming and how fast the wind speeds are, and are we going to get a number 10 this year? And that's the highest category. And it was all very exciting. So when I got my first sort of mini weather station kit, and I set it out, and the typhoon blew it away and almost broke it, that was really exciting in some ways. And also then staring at the aftermath, right, where trees were fell and how what things looked like, the landscape afterwards, really made me realize the interaction between the environment and our human systems. And I think that sort of started the intersection, the interest for me in the intersection of natural and human systems. So in my GCSEs and onto my IBs, I studied both geography and economics. I would have easily been a geography major as well in uni. That's why I've always been interested in both.
So now moving on to your second song, can you tell me what it is and reasons why you've chosen it?
So we're still in the denial stage on the island. And the second song is the 2016 musical, Dear Evan Hansen's You Will Be Found. Obviously, you will be found as in, you know, you're also still in denial in some ways that you will be found in a desert island. But actually, this song is quite uplifting. The actor and artist that's sung it, Ben Platt, is one of my all-time favorite people and singers and talent. He just has an amazing voice. I first listened to him in Pitch Perfect, yet another musical, a musical movie. He was part of course, this is an a cappella based movie if you haven't seen it before. And I just loved his voice so much that I've always had him on my Spotify. And I've listened to the songs even before I got to see the musical. And so I was completely mesmerized when I actually made it to see it. And I actually saw it in London in my year at the OSE. So I went to West End and I managed to see Dear Evan Hansen live, and the song is so mesmerizing and uplifting, because I think the main message is that no matter how dark and sort of sad things are looking, you're not alone. I think that's the main message. And I think whilst in denial on the island, I would also like to remind myself that no matter how bad things are, you're not alone.
So now moving on to your love for German and Germany. How did your love of the language and country begin?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. I would say that when I went to British school in Shanghai, so that's sort of when I left Hong Kong at 13, I went to British school and did GCSEs and things. And I actually did year 9 in Shanghai as well. And at the British school, I got to do a year of German in year 9. And I thought I was decent at it, but because of the course choices, you know, in GCSEs there are different blocks, and I ended up not choosing to continue with German, and I sort of forgot about it. But it was always there, I think, the inspiration, because I actually quite liked the language. But then I focused on my other subjects. And then at uni, the first year in the summer, I decided to take German again, right? Of course, year 9, I didn't learn very much. I didn't remember very much. But I remember liking it a lot. And so I decided to take a summer course in German. And I fell in love with it. I mean, I don't know what it was, but I was really excited to learn it. I feel that there's a lot of things that made sense. There's a lot of similarities, and there's interesting differences linguistically to English, for example, English being also a Germanic language. And yeah, I just kept going. I think one thing after another, I decided to go study abroad. And we have some winter programs at the time at my uni. And the first course I took in Germany was more on culture, business, politics. And, you know, not everyone spoke German or spoke very well. And that was my first time in Germany. And I loved it. I absolutely loved the experience so much that I decided to continue learning German. And then it just sort of snowballed. I eventually became sort of a double degree. So I did sort of two subjects in my uni course and ended up having German as my sort of second major. So that's how it happened, I suppose.
Yeah, but I've got some more German related questions, but before that, can I hear your third song?
Yeah, so the third song, now we are in the second stage of grief and loss on the island. And I would say that this is now, the third song is my probably all-time favorite song. If you were to ask me what my favorite song is, it is this song, which is This Is Me, yet another musical from The Greatest Showman. Have you seen Greatest Showman?
No, but I've not seen many films, so
okay.
That's not.
Well, it is great.
No, I've heard, of course.
And the song is "This Is Me" with Hiella Seto, and the version that I would love all of you to listen to is the workshop session version, which is when they put together sort of a draft version and have other executives listen to them before a movie or production gets greenlit, right? So before it goes forward into production. And that version, which was filmed luckily, had this such an emotional moment, right? Where basically most of the cast were sort of crying, and there was such raw emotional energy that sort of radiated from that. It was just so powerful that I can see why they were moved so much that they would, you know, go ahead with a movie based on this song. And it gave me goosebumps when I saw that and listened to that. So it is a very powerful song. I would say it's sort of an anthem for acceptance, for those who feel ostracized and marginalized as a sort of young gay child growing up in Hong Kong and a sort of a conservative Chinese society. This is a song that I wish was with me the whole time, right? It's about, you know, who you are and accepting who you are, both internally and externally. And I think it's one of the most powerful things, and I sing it all the time. yeah, so hope you enjoy that.
Yeah, so I don't know The Greatest Showman, but of course I do know that song. I think that's probably the reason why I know The Greatest Showman, because of that song alone.
Yeah, absolutely recommend it. Definitely a highlight. So I try to learn it on the guitar now, and we'll see.
Going back to your German, when you were doing your PhD at Columbia, you took night classes at NYU in German, which ultimately led to you applying to the program International Parliamentary Scholars at the German Bundestag. Firstly, did I pronounce that right? Bundestag,
yes.
Bundestag. So you said to me, getting on the program came as a shock to you. Why was that?
Well, it was a very intimidating interview, I must say. So there was an application process involving many pages. If those of you who are familiar with the German system, there's a lot of paperwork that needs to be very organized. And I remember I was doing the paperwork whilst on a conference in Santiago, Chile, and getting all of that sorted from very far away with all my stuff. It was very difficult. And the shock came because the interview was one of the hardest things I've had to do. I think I prepared. I would say I prepared. I met with my teachers at NYU, and we did some practice rounds, and I had a binder of the different topics that could come up, and I really prepared as if it were an exam in some ways. And I still felt that it was the hardest thing. The interview took place in the German embassy in Washington, D.C., starting with, you know, clearing security and being held in a holding room. And then you enter this very nice looking boardroom with a panel of judges, essentially, which consisted of an MP, several professors, alumni of the program, and it was a panel of people on one side of the table and you on the other side being sort of interrogated. And it was very intimidating, very scary. And the whole thing was in German, of course, and high level German, right? And so I thought I completely screwed it up, right? I did a lot of preparation, but none of which was on memorizing names. I'm notoriously bad with names. My students would know. And I just didn't bother learning, you know, the list of people who were in office. And they asked me quite a few of those questions. And I was very nervous. And I was like, sorry, some of them I don't know. And I left the room feeling pretty dejected. And my uncle at the time was working in a restaurant nearby. I went, sat down, ordered several cocktails, and thought I really, you know, screwed it up. And I had to take the train back to New York that day. And I was calling my friends in Germany saying, oh, there's no way I got in. I did so horribly. And then a few weeks later, I got the email and the letter that I got it. And it did come as a shock. Yeah.
Can you now tell me about song number four?
Yes. So now we're on the bargaining stage of our stages of grief and loss on the island. And in the bargaining stage, I think I would like to hear more about, but sort of reminisce about the past life that's not on the desert island and think about the good times I've had. So the next song is also a throwback to my childhood and teenage years, which is the song is Good Times by All Time Low. It's actually a song released in 2017, but why is it sort of a throwback for me is, well, first of all, my music taste has been sort of revolving this pop rock, emo rock, alternative rock for a while, since my teenage years, and sort of stuck there a little bit. And All Time Low is a band from Maryland, which is where I have family. My American family is from Maryland. And I have very fond memories of this band because they just have such cool songs. And I've always wanted to see them in action. And during my PhD in New York, I actually got to see them with my best friend, Rachel, in Central Park. And the funny thing was, All Time Low was playing. And their audience, I would say the demographic is teenage girls. And it was very funny because she and I were standing there looking around. It was people who were sipping wine like we were parents. And we, you know, after a couple of wines, we got into it and we were, you know, part of the party. But yeah, the song Good Times is, it's really about looking back fondly in the past, the good times, sort of appreciating the good times that you've had and sort of looking to the next chapters. And so maybe that's sort of the bargaining process that I have on the island. I want to think about the good times that I've had growing up and in different places and yeah, just sort of enjoy that moment.
So as I mentioned before, you did your PhD at Columbia University. What was your PhD about?
Oh gosh, this has been a while somebody has asked me that. So my PhD was about infrastructure and heavily anchored on aviation infrastructure. I've always been fascinated by aviation, even as a young child. As I said, I had to move from Hong Kong to Shanghai and my family were sort of split in both locations. And I was on a plane, you know, 15, 16 years old on my own a lot. These two cities are two and a half hours away on the plane, and I was already developing a relationship with this mode of transport since a very young age. And of course, with my sort of travels after that, that has not stopped at all. And when I was doing my PhD and thinking about the questions that I wanted to answer, the first question to me was, how does aviation connections change lives, change communities, change economic outcomes, and help innovation, right? The very fact that we're able to connect across such great distances means that interactions that otherwise wouldn't have happened were able to take place as a result of this technology. So my dissertation was dually about the sort of economic geography, urban economics question of how aviation connectivity affects regional growth and innovation, as well as how our environmental system, going back to sort of my interest in natural and human systems, what does climate change, how does climate change in turn affect the system, right? Which can come in many forms. And there's lots of research that's, there's a lot of emerging research on this subject with the fact that temperature is increasing that affects flight performance and landing and turbulence and persistence of storms and things like that. And so my dissertation looks at these two things, right? Both the sort of urban question of how this technology influences regional economies and the environmental question of how the feedback, right, of climate change can have on the aviation system itself, which complements the work that has been done a lot in engineering and the sciences on, you know, we think about aviation being very polluting, right? That's sort of the first strand. And I think now the reverse feedback impact is an up and coming sort of area of research. So that's in a nutshell what my PhD is about.
And now your fifth song. Can you tell me what it is and for any reasons why?
So continuing on the bargaining theme, and we just talked about having good times and reminiscing the good times and thinking forward as well. I have the sort of German counterpart to that exact theme, which is called An guten Tagen by Johannes Oerding. Of course, as a German studies sort of enthusiast, I also listen to quite a lot of German songs, and German pop is one of my favorite genres. And An guten Tagen basically means on good days, right, directly translated. So it's very similar to good times in terms of theme. A very different style of song though. It's also about appreciating the good times. And even if the good time is not forever, just, you know, it's a very good mood, uplifting song. It's about here and now and looking forward to the good days. This is a 2019 song by Johannes Oerding. I absolutely love him. I wish I would get to see him perform live one day.
So now I wanted to talk about your travels. So you've lived in many cities all over the world. Did you find it difficult moving between places?
Actually, I think I find it difficult not moving frequently nowadays. I think I've sort of gotten so used to it that I have to move every couple of years now. And it's kind of strange to think that, you know, when one establishes a career, you have to sort of stay put for a couple of years in a spot. I've gotten so used to it that even during my PhD, as I said, I would just like bugger off somewhere else, right? I've been done a semester in Boston and a semester in Berlin. And it became a habit in some way. So I never found them difficult per se. I think the hardest thing is reestablishing those friendship networks and finding your community. And the hardest thing also is finding a new hairdresser, barber. Always hard to get used to that. Otherwise I think I've gotten the hang of it.
Can you tell me about the sixth song you'll be taking with you?
Sure. So we are now on the sort of fourth stage of grief and loss. And this stage is depression. So a little bit on the sadder end, but nonetheless, I didn't really choose songs that were very depressing per se. The next song is Seasons of Love by yet again musical, and is the 1996 Tony Award winning musical, which is Rent. And there are many reasons why I picked this song. First of all, when I was in school, I performed the song. I was part of choir, and I was, for whatever reason, one of the lead tenors, and I had the sort of solo part in this song, and I really love this song. And it was also the first song I learned on the guitar. And there's so much in the song that is so interesting. It's about value of life and how we should count that and measure that, right? And it sort of argues for that we should be measuring that not in time and not in other sort of tangible or superficial elements, right? But we should be measuring that in love. And in the context of the song, of course, it is the musical has sort of the HIV/AIDS crisis as the backdrop, right? And in New York City. And I also think that as a gay person that has tried to understand the magnitude of what happened in the past, and just being grateful for the activism and the medical advancements that took place that enabled the quality of life we have today, is something very humbling and very deep. And I must sort of acknowledge that with the song in my song choices. And it is also a very uplifting song, right? It's very energetic, and you just feel really good hearing it. So Seasons of Love, anytime.
As we discussed before, you've lived in the cities all over the world and you like changing every few years. If I was to ask you, firstly, to pick one country that you'd be bonded to for the rest of your life, would you be able to make a decision?
I mean, that's a pretty easy question. And actually, it will tie very well to my seventh song, because the title, if you don't mind me just telling you, it is Das ist Berlin, from a sort of musical, two-piece musical group or project, Endlich August, which translates to Finally August. And the song Das ist Berlin, This is Berlin, I would say, you know, if anyone asked me what's my favorite city and place that you would, you know, go back to live in a heartbeat, it's most definitely Berlin. And the song was released in 2016. It is an instant icon and basically sort of song of Berlin. It really describes the diversity, the character, the spirit and attitude about what Berlin represents, both in history and in sort of how people live there these days, and the sort of attitude, the carefreeness, the accepting, the acceptance of Berlin. I think it's such a cool city and a cool place. So if I were sort of had to make a choice today, where to be sort of be forever, at the moment I probably will pick Germany and Berlin. And I feel that there is some kind of unfulfilled mission maybe, I think, and this song is amazing. It tells you so much about Berlin in just 3 minutes. Anyone who has been to Berlin or lived in Berlin can relate to a lot of elements that they mention in the song. So definitely worth a listen.
And my final question is, what is your favorite thing about being part of the LSE?
I think I sort of already alluded to this before, which is the excellent students that the LSE has, and being able to work with such intelligent minds that work so hard, and also seeing their resilience, right? Mentoring these dissertations in the middle of the pandemic, I see how strong they are and how they're able to cope with different circumstances and just navigate through and carry on. And I'm so proud of what they produced. And I think marking these dissertations right now, it's really an emotional moment for me because I can see what they have produced now. Certainly the students would be the highlight of my time at the LSE.
And now moving on to your eighth and final song, can you tell me what it is and why?
So the eighth and final song ties into the final stage, which is acceptance. So I'm thinking about a song that would be, of course, uplifting, emotional, and speaks to strength and hope and feelings of perhaps freedom and looking forward to the future. And this song is called Guang Fei Sui Yun, which is Cantonese, by the band Beyond. It translates to Glorious Years as the title of the song. And it was released in 1990 in the context of sort of celebrating Nelson Mandela and his fight on on the apartheid in South Africa. And the song has a lot of allusions to the discriminations and restrictions faced by, as a result of a sort of racial discrimination by skin color. And it's about seeing that light and hope and future and fighting that. It's sort of a fight song in some ways. It's giving us strength and thinking about how we can achieve equality. And I think in the acceptance stage on the island, I want something that would make me think about keeping on fighting and changing the future. And so this is one of the most uplifting songs. I think every Hong Konger knows it. It's very catchy. It has this very sort of magnetic guitar going through it. It's one of a kind of song in Cantonese, in the canto pop world. So highly recommended as well.
So we're now moving on to the second part. What is the book you're going to be taking with you to accompany the Bible and the Beverage Report?
This was an obvious choice for me. It is Skyfaring by Mark van Honecke. And Mark is a pilot. He is very interesting. He was trained as a historian and has gone through sort of several career changes before making it to an airline pilot. And in this book, he does the most romantic, intellectual, and poetic account and treatment of one's fascination with flight and how flight interacts and intersects with people's lives. And the level of detail in his sort of imagery and seamless infusion of scientific and technical knowledge makes this book so hard to put down, yet so hard to read in some ways, because you want to sit down and find out everything that he just talked about and think about the physics of it. And so it's a wonderful read, at the same time, a read that really educates along the way of his sort of his eloquent prose. And this book was released in 2015 and became, I mean, obviously as a scholar of that's interested in aviation, this obviously, you know, piqued my interest. And I referenced one of his chapters, and in this chapter, he mentioned an idea, a concept called place lags. And this concept I borrowed, I had the opportunity and honor to give the graduation speech at my PhD graduation ceremony. And I borrowed this idea of a place lag and thinking about the theme of my speech was on embracing place lags. And perhaps this is appropriate also to the desert island, because a place lag is like a jet lag, but it's a spatial lag rather than a temporal lag, right? A jet lag is sort of confusion and a sort of discordance of time, because you've traveled between different time zones and your clocks are sort of all over the place. A place lag, similarly, but not temporally, it's about spatial lags, right? You're in a cafe in London and you're in a cafe in New York and you're not really sure where you are because you just travel through so many spaces, right? So many different spaces, and things may look familiar, but you're really lagging in space, right? I think it's such a powerful metaphor for students as well, right? What they will have to be facing as they go on from different stages of their education into work life and into different aspects and encountering different pressures of people expecting them to do one thing versus another, your own goals and things, and everything becomes sort of confusing, and you can have that lag as well. And of course, moving places, right? A lot of students do move across continents, has that physical dimension as well. So lots of place lags I argued in my speech, and was really thanks to Mark and his book for putting it in such colorful and powerful words. So highly recommended. And this book, I think, will probably have enough sort of knowledge for me to, gives me enough knowledge on navigation and physics that I might be able to figure out a way to get off this island or spot a plane and maybe somehow signal. So I think it will be a book that will keep me occupied, will keep me engaged, will keep me thinking intellectually, And might even offer us a way out of the island. So I highly recommend it. And another cool thing about what happened with my speech was that I just went ahead a few days before my speech. I emailed Mark, who is the author of the book, and I said, you know, completely out of blue, saying, thanks for writing this. I am borrowing one of your chapters in my speech. If you somehow happen to be in New York, feel free to stop by. And I was so shocked that he actually came. He and his partner came to my graduation speech. I had arranged sort of the front row seats for them to see if they can sort of get in, and they were there. I couldn't actually see them because I was facing all the graduates, and they had to leave afterwards. And I was busy, of course, with my family and things, but they attended and we had some email exchanges afterwards. And it was one of the most amazing things I was shocked and really grateful that he came and listened. And I'm not sure if I did any justice to, of course, his metaphor or idea or concept, but I hope he enjoyed it. And hopefully I'll be able to meet him for coffee one day in LA or London or wherever it may be. Really, really grateful and really excited. And it also goes to show that, you know, we just need to try and be brave. I'm very happy to bring this book, Mark's book, with me on the island.
And now the luxury item.
I think this is kind of silly, but that's what I picked, and not very wise, maybe. I've heard so many people pick, you know, much more useful things, but I picked Häagen-Dazs coffee ice cream. This is a family favorite. My mom, my sister, my brother, we all love it. And it's sort of hands down our favorite flavor. There's a large pint of it sitting in my freezer at the moment, and always will be. I first got to the island and the luxury item, I'll probably consume this entire pint of ice cream.
That's a luxury item I can definitely get behind. And finally, what is your quote of choice?
My quote of choice is going to be Oscar Wilde from Lady Windermere's Fan. We're all in the gutter, but some of us are looking at the stars. Lady Windermere's Fan, I've read at school, I think in year 9, with one of my favorite teachers, English and drama teachers, and I think the quote is, again, in this general theme of uplifting and knowing that, you know, we're not alone in darkness, but some of us are looking up and looking forward and trying to figure out something else and giving that hope and sort of motivation to be optimistic. And so that would be my quote, Oscar Wilde.
Well, Jason, that brings us to the end. Thank you very much for telling me about your Geography Island Jams.
Thank you so much. Thank you.